Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast.
If you're like me and suffer from insomnia, you know what? That's not fun. You know, I tried everything. I couldn't get a good night's sleep. And this is neither drug nor alcohol induced. That's right. It is MyPillow. Mike Lindell invented it, and he fitted me for my first MyPillow, and it's changed my life. I fall asleep faster, stay asleep longer, and the good news, you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com, promo code Sean, and take advantage of one of Mike Lindell's best offers, his special four-pack. You get 50% off two MyPillow premium pillows, two go-anywhere pillows. Now, MyPillow is made in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee, no risk to you, and a 10-year warranty. You don't want to spend more sleepless nights on a pillow tossing and turning that's not working for you. Just go to MyPillow.com right now. Use the promo code Sean, and you get Mike Lindell's special four-pack. You get two MyPillow premium pillows, two go-anywhere pillows, 50% off, and you'll start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep you've been craving and deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Sean.
All right, glad you're with us on a busy news Friday. 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. We start with some sad news today, and I want to actually read the entire letter later in the program today about Charles Krauthammer. He has been fighting a good fight against cancer, and sadly, as he says in his letter, my doctors tell me their best estimate is I only have a few weeks left to live. And he writes, this is the final verdict. My fight is over. Our thoughts and prayers are with him and his family. And but I'm going to tell you a little story about Charles and our relationship and something that he actually told me. I tell your story, the story about you and me all the time, and how his whole life is a profile in courage in so many ways. And we can all learn from his courage. We've got an update. I mean, I cannot even believe what this has evolved into, but it's, although it's stopped because the media has actually figured out that in many ways how dumb they are when I said, if, kidding, bad idea, won't work out well for you. I'd never give the advice. And that's when I said, oh, well, Robert Mueller wants your phones. If I were to suggest, I said, if, you know, words do matter. That dope on MSNBC said, Hannity, words matter. His words are powerful. He's living off his words. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's the whole point. If you would actually read and listen and pay attention, you know, you might get better grades in school. And you might actually learn how to host a TV show. You never know by the end of it. But anyway, so this idea, I said, well, if I were to tell people to do what Hillary did, I also said, it's not going to work out well for you. It's not, because it's a bad idea. I said bad idea. Kidding. That you just say, oh, Mueller wants my cell phone. Well, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to erase everything. I'm going to delete everything. And then I'm going to acid wash the cell phone with bleach bit and erase the hard drive. Then I'm going to pull out the SIM card. And just to make sure, I'll bust it up into itsy bitsy pieces and hand it to Robert Mueller. And the media goes insane. They lost their minds. We'll have a lot on that today. What an incredible week next week is for all of us as we bring you the show from Singapore at the summit. We are not going to be able, now with the announcement of the IG report on Thursday, it is a 22-hour flight from New York to Singapore. 22 hours. By the way, it's one of the longest flights you can have. How far is it from New York to New Zealand? It's got to be, or it's pretty long, right? Or Australia. Yeah, I don't have a big bucket list as everybody else has in life, and I'm not the big world traveler that all these people are. I just haven't been. You know, first time I was on a plane, I was 20 years old, and it was just a short flight from Rhode Island to New York. That was it. And I remember it was so cheap. It was like $100 round trip. I said, all right, I'll take that deal. Anyway, so we'll be broadcasting all next week from Singapore, but because of the announcement that the IG report's coming out on Thursday, well, we're not going to be able to get back in time, but we'll be doing our shows. Literally, this radio show will be at 3 in the morning. Our TV show will be at 9 in the morning. and we look forward to being there. And I mean, there's a lot of hope here. And this is the sad position the left now finds themselves in America. Because for them to be successful in November, they've got to hope Donald Trump fails. Well, the only problem is Donald Trump's not failing. The problem for them is Donald Trump is succeeding in 503 days at a level that nobody anticipated. We had the same guy that nobody thought could win the primary. The same guy that they were laughing at when he announced he was running for president. The same guy that they were laughing at any idea that he could beat Hillary Clinton and the Clinton machine. Well, now he's exceeded all expectations on the economy. I mean, the idea that we have more jobs now in America than we have with people on unemployment, it blows me away. And it should blow all of us away. And it should make us happy. You know, I know what the last election was about because we covered it every single day. It was about the forgotten men and women of America. And for those people, we now have millions of fewer people on food stamps in America. Millions of fewer people in poverty. Look at this. These numbers are just mind-numbing in terms of how well things are going for the country. You know, now we have household wealth. That has hit an all-time high. Federal Reserve's latest flow of funds report shows that U.S. net worth of U.S. households rose over $100 trillion for the first time ever, hitting a new all-time high of $100.8 trillion. The report noted how Americans now own $116.3 trillion in assets and have a modest $15.6 trillion in liabilities. Now, some that's just the rich, Hannity. No. I mean, I couldn't believe that Nancy Pelosi would refer to tax cuts as crumbs and actively campaigning on the idea that she wants to take the $1,000, $2,000 per family back, the crumbs back. Well, I know what it's like not to have money because I didn't make any money in my career. I didn't have any money. And I know what it's like to live paycheck to paycheck to paycheck for a lot of years of my life. And, well, you work in TV, you blah, 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 you work in radio. Okay, but I never thought I'd succeed in any of it. I thought, you know, I thought I'd be doing something else. Thank God, frankly, I've been blessed beyond anything I ever imagined. And I feel honored every day to have this microphone. And I thank all of you for making it possible. We're in the fight of our lives right now for this country. It's what this whole, you know, oh, we got new charges against Manafort today. Oh, okay, shocking. Yeah. What's the whole Manafort case about? Manafort case is about trying to squeeze Manafort, put the screws to him, I'm quoting Judge Ellis III, to make him sing or maybe compose. Compose means, I'll make up the story to make this go away. You mean you're going to give me 30 years in jail or if I sign this paper saying Donald Trump did A, B, or C, you'll let me out for free? I get a get out of jail card for free? That's what singing and composing is all about. And Ellis even said it's about, getting him to sing so he can prosecute him. And if you can prosecute him or if you impeach him. The judge is right. Judge understands it. Anyway, I digress. But this, look at the soaring economy. It's now lifting the president's approval ratings all across the board. You know, holding steady at 50% now for a long time. I would also argue, and you could say, Hannity, this is speculation on your part. Well, I'm allowed to have my opinions. And anyway, I just think that his numbers, he will always poll lower than what he really is. I think there's a group of people that secretly like Donald Trump that want that are not going to tell any pollster that they like him and support him. They're going to tell him to pound sand. I mean, Mitt Romney today saying, Trump's going to win in 2020. Mitt Romney, I mean, there was a point there where he really seemed to hate the president. I know he's running for Senate. And this was always hard for me because I always liked Mitt Romney. I always liked personally. I think Mitt Romney's a wonderful person. His wife is a wonderful woman. His kids are amazing. I have no idea why he went off the rails as it relates to Donald Trump. I know they're different people. I know that Donald Trump comes. Look, he offends people's sensibilities. I understand it. You know, I know that All my, I grew up in New York, but I lived in the South. They're very different sensibilities. I prefer Southern sensibilities, even as a native New Yorker. It's much nicer. It really is. But I don't think America was looking for nice and predictable and establishment and vanilla, a vanilla president that was afraid, like all the other presidents, to do bold things. America voted for a disruptor and an iconoclast and somebody that says, well, maybe that's the way he used to do it. We're going to do it this way. Just like with all the pardons that have been going on. I love these issues of the pardons. Anyway, you know, president out there today was a wide range of issues. You know what? I'll play a lot of it in the next half hour. Discussing the upcoming summit with Kim Jong-un, little rocket man. Everybody in the media predicted nuclear war. I'll only do a deal with North Korea through Congress, unlike what Obama did at the Iranian deal. Well, that's how, if Obama did it the way Trump's going to do the North Korean deal, assuming it happens, I mean, if it doesn't happen, it's fine. And the president keeps managing expectations, says, I'll walk out in 2 seconds. It may take five meetings, whatever. Now, based on the actions of Kim Jong-un, I think the most revealing is that he has, you know, now he's purging the old hardliners out of North Korea. That usually is a big sign that he's seriously open to reforms. But I think we saw that when he was literally dismantling his nuclear test site facility. And when he walked across the DMZ and when he released the hostages. And I think that, you know, he's willing to talk about denuclearization. I will tell you this. If he didn't, I don't know how he survives under Trump with the economic sanctions of Trump and the world. And the president's relationship with China has gone a long way. Anyway, to finish the original thought, we're going to be in Singapore. Now we've got Tuesday, the summit, and Thursday, the IG report. Problem with the IG report, from my perspective, is they've had it. Rod Rosenstein and company have had it for two plus weeks. And that means that they have a right to ask the inspector general for changes, redactions, adding comments. I don't know if the inspector general is going to hold strong under that pressure. Now, he needs to. Frankly, I don't think it should have been released next week at all. The news is going to be dominated by North Korea. So as I predicted, I thought they were going to try and bury the report. They've 18 months, and they're going to release it the week of the summit. The biggest, you know, for some people that don't know Reagan and Gorbachev, this is it. This is a historic moment. You know, Mr. Gorbachev teared down this wall. Reagan walking out of Reykjavik. The media was stunned. And it was all over strategic defense. Well, Reagan turned out to be a genius. They mocked him saying Star Wars. And it ended up, look at the Iron Dome in Israel. Yeah, you can take missiles out of the sky. And we're building even newer technologies. You know, it was Republicans that called Reagan an amiable dunce. It wasn't Democrats. It was Republicans that referred to his economic policies, which was the longest period of peacetime economic growth. Same policies President Trump is following. 20 million new jobs created. And that was referred to as voodoo economics. All right, so we got a lot of ground to cover. I'm going to play. President talks about the power of the pardon. He talks about North Korea. He talks about he's prepared to meet with Kim Jong-un, the inspector general's report, James Comey, this whole New York Times piece, which I'll touch on, and all these countries that have been taking advantage of us in trade. And even says he wants to talk to those players that kneel because he wants to, if they're unhappy with the criminal justice system, maybe they want to recommend pardons to him. I thought that was an amazing... That's the difference between him and everybody else. He's not predictable.
With only a kite, a house key, and wet hemp string, Benjamin Franklin captured lightning in a bottle. Over 260 years later, with a little resourcefulness, ingenuity, and grit, we're not only capturing energy from the sun and wind, we're storing it, ensuring Americans have the energy they need whenever they need it. Learn more about the nation's leader in energy storage at NextEraEnergy.com.
All right, as we roll along, Sean Hannity Show, glad you are with us. By the way, Singapore NBC News is expected to be packed to the gills next week with spies. Great. Can't wait to meet them. We'll get to all of that. I want to just, Sally Yates is urging judges and lawyers to go on the offensive against Trump. Wow. You know, she said, go on the offensive, she said during a keynote speech at the American Constitution Society. Think of the preservation of public servants who go to work every day, now derided as the deep state swamp creatures who have, in fact, dedicated their professional lives to making our country better. This is not the time to be passive. No, we're going to go after individuals with the power of the deep state. That's what we're going to do. We're going to double down on stupid. That's what we'll do. I think this new Manafort indictment shows the desperation that is now set in all across the board. Now, you got this story of this Intel staffer indicted for playing a role in the Russiagate probe. And here's the problem. You've got these two people that are dating. One is a member of the Senate Intel Committee on it and has information. And it shouldn't surprise anybody how deep state this is. Anyway, he's dating this woman that works at BuzzFeed and then the New York Times, et cetera, et cetera. What I don't like and scares me and should scare everybody is that the Department of Justice is holding on to, is literally asking journalists for their sources. Now, in this particular case, they're together and all this information is coming out. And on the other hand, they're leaking national security secrets. I guess the only big reason for my suspicion, and you've got to be careful, because we have to maintain a freedom of the press, but nor can we have America's secrets being revealed. So it's a very slippery slope, and it's a fine line. And I don't think I'd be anywhere near suspicious as I am today about any of this were it not for lying to FISA court judges, not having the fix-in in the Hillary Clinton case. I think it has changed and I'm recalibrating. You know, I just don't take anything on face value anymore. Not that I ever really did, but the Senate Intel, a select Intel staffer, you know, was targeting the Trump campaign in an aggressive leak campaign. Can't have that either. And it appears that the Department of Justice, as I read more, I think more, last night I was more inclined to think, uh-oh, this is scary. Now I'm more inclined to think today with more information that they probably got a guy that was doing horrible things. All right, we'll play you the president's press conference from earlier next. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. I mean, I will say this as somebody that knows the president. How often do you talk to him? It's none of your business. I just love how people, I mean, am I supposed to reveal my sources the way everybody else does? It's none of your business if I do, when I do, what I say, what I don't say. I'm never telling you people. And I'll just let you speculate and lie and, you know, promote fake news all you want. Kind of like what happened yesterday or the day before. Hannity is telling them to bust up their phones into itsy bitsy pieces and ash and wash the hard drive. And I said, if, and I said, it's a dumb idea. And I said, it's not going to work out well. And so on and so forth. But of course, some of these people want me in jail, which is hilarious. And it reveals so much about them because they never cared about Hillary actually having done all of it. And the fact that they didn't put two and two together, it takes my breath away. I want to go to the president today. So the president is animated when he is engaged. He loves being in the middle of it. He loves fighting for the country. He wants America to get the best deals. So we got this huge historic summit coming up. He's managed everybody's expectations on it. But he literally, you know, comes out on the White House lawn earlier today as he's headed up to the G7 and he's talking about meeting Kim Jong-un. He's talking about how Russia should be back in the G7. You notice, I think the president has basically decided, all right, all the old rules are off. Let's hit a reset and see where we go. A real reset, not that phony button that Hillary used. Anyway, then he went on to say, well, have you prepared a lot? And he said, I've been preparing my whole life. Thank you very much. And it makes him unique in as much as he's not going to have 50,000 advisors cramming his brain full of facts and figures. It's basically, if I had to guess, it comes down to All right, do you want a deal to end the war? Good, let's agree. Okay, meaning the Korean War. Do you want a deal? Are you willing to denuclearize your country completely, verifiably, and forever? Okay, how do we get there? That's what the conversation's going to be. How much preparation do you really need for that? I mean, if you follow politics as the president does, you don't need a whole lot. All you need to do is have the basic fundamentals and then start talking about the terms of a deal. Oh, why everybody makes this so hard? And then he actually said, ask Hillary about my preparation. So the IG Horowitz's report comes out on Thursday. Happens to be the president's birthday. He talked about that and how he did the country a service by firing Comey.
Is the Comey report going to be your birthday present? Well, it seems that it's coming out on my birthday. Maybe that's appropriate. Let's see. It is. Look, he's a very dishonest man. I've been saying it for a long time. I think I did our country a great fire, a really great favor when I fired him. And we'll see what happens. We'll see what the report says. But I guess it just got announced it's coming out on June 14th. So that'll be maybe a nice birthday present. Who knows?
Well, why don't we just do this? Why don't we just go through all these different topics from the president today, one by one? First discussing next Tuesday's upcoming summit with Kim Jong-un and in Singapore, where we are and what he expects from the summit.
I hope the upcoming meeting in Singapore represents the beginning of a bright new future for North Korea and indeed a bright new future for the world. The denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula would usher in a new era of prosperity, security, and peace for all Koreans, North and South, and for people everywhere. We could absolutely sign an agreement. We're looking at it. We're talking about it with them. We're talking about it with a lot of other people. But that could happen. But that's really the beginning. Sounds a little bit strange, but that's probably the easy part. The hard part remains after that. Maximum pressure is absolutely in effect. We don't use the term anymore because we're going into a friendly negotiation. Perhaps after that negotiation, I will be using it again. You'll know how well we do with the negotiation. If you hear me saying we're going to use maximum pressure, you'll know the negotiation did not do well.
If the summit does go well, will you be inviting North Korean leader Kim Jong-un to the United States?
Well, the answer is yes to the second part of your question, but certainly if it goes well. And I think it would be well received. I think he would look at it very favorably, so I think that could happen. All I can say is I am totally prepared to walk away. I did it once before. You have to be able to walk away. I really believe that we have the potential to do something incredible for the world. And it's my honor to be involved.
All right, so it's look, I've never been to Singapore. This is going to be great. Then the president. Now, this is interesting because, oh, Russia, Russia, Russia. Well, the president said maybe Russia should be back in the G7. You know, I've been their worst nightmare. And in many ways, that's all true, especially on the issue of energy independence. That is the lifeblood of the Russian economy. And we have more resources for energy than they do. And here's what the president had to say about that. Of course, the media is in a total Russia. If he even says the word Russia, they just melt and bubble and fizz and give off all remaining energies they have. Here's what he said.
It used to be the G8 because Russia was in it, and now Russia's not in it. Now, I love our country. I have been Russia's worst nightmare. If Hillary got in, I think Putin is probably going, man, I wish Hillary won. Because you see what I do. But with that being said, Russia should be in this meeting. Why are we having a meeting without Russia being in the meeting? And I would recommend, and it's up to them, but Russia should be in the meeting. It should be a part of it. You know, whether you like it or not, and it may not be politically correct, but we have a world to run. And in the G7, which used to be the G8, they threw Russia out. They should let Russia come back in because we should have Russia at the negotiating table.
Now he went on to say after that, the issue of does he have an absolute right to pardon? And this is kind of interesting because he also talked about NFL players. I'll play these back to back here. and how the NFL players should stand for the anthem, and how he wants to talk to them about the criminal justice system, and then even suggests, which I thought was a fascinating twist on all of it today, that in fact, well, maybe he wants to pardon. He wants pardoning suggestions from some of the people that are kneeling in the NFL. If they think the country's unjust or it's been unfair and they have specific suggestions, well, maybe we can right these wrongs. Look at what happened when this woman was convicted of one drug offense. A grandmother spent 2 years in jail. She gets out of prison. I mean, that was the feel-good story of the year. And she says, I thank you, Mr. President. Thank you for the second chance. I'm not going to let America down. It was an amazing moment. Anyway, to reach out the way he did is pretty interesting. Let's play what he said on that today.
No, I'm not above the law. I never want anybody to be above the law. But the pardons are a very positive thing for a president. I think you see the way I'm using them. And yes, I do have an absolute right to pardon myself, but I'll never have to do it because I didn't do anything wrong. And everybody knows it. There's been no collusion. There's been no obstruction. It's all a made-up fantasy. It's a witch hunt. No collusion, no obstruction, no nothing. Now, the Democrats have had massive collusion, massive obstruction, and they should be investigated. We'll see what's happening. What I'm thinking to do, you have a lot of people in the NFL in particular, but in sports leagues, they're not proud enough to stand for our national anthem. I don't like that. What I'm going to do is I'm going to say to them, instead of talk, it's all talk, talk, talk. We have a great country. You should stand for our national anthem. You shouldn't go in a locker room when our national anthem is played. I am going to ask all of those people to recommend to me, because that's what they're protesting, people that they think were unfairly treated by the justice system. And I understand that. And I'm going to ask them to recommend to me people that were unfairly treated, friends of theirs or people that they know about. And I'm going to take a look at those applications. And if I find, and my committee finds, that they're unfairly treated, then we will pardon them or at least let them out.
Now, the president, I thought that, again, what you see in all of these cuts is a president that is thinking out of the box, a president that is not conventional, a president that wants to get things done. You know, in that sense, this could be so transformative for the country. In as much as the old style political calculating, finger in the air, oh, this is too hard, you know, politicians of both parties, that paradigm could actually die as a result of an iconoclast and somebody that is literally a disruptor that just does the right thing and gets it done.
No, I didn't say that. I said I've been preparing all my life. I always believe in preparation, but I've been preparing all my life. You know, these one-week preparations, they don't work. Just ask Hillary what happened to her in the debates. So I've been preparing for this all my life. And frankly, it's really just the fake news, because if you run, Peter, just a little bit longer, the clip, you would see I've really been preparing all my life. I said that, but of course, you know, the news doesn't pick that up because it's fake news.
Now, the president, you know, when he said the IG report might be a nice birthday present, and he did a country of service by firing Comey, that was pretty interesting. Then the president addressed this whole New York Times issue, saying, I'm a big believer in freedom of the press, but you can't leak classified information like Comey's people. He's right. That's where in the dilemma that I was talking about before comes in. Here's what he had to say, and what was really a wide-ranging, you know, amount of comments that he made.
It's very interesting that they caught a leaker, and it's a very important leaker. So it's very interesting. I'm getting information on it now. Happened last night. It could be a terrific thing. I know I believe strongly in freedom of the press. I'm a big believer in freedom of the press, but I'm also a believer in classified information. It has to remain classified, and that includes Comey and his band of thieves who leak classified information all over the place. So I'm a very big believer in freedom of the press, but I'm also a believer that you cannot leak classified information.
I was also glad the president brought up the double standard. Christian Saucier, you know, here's a guy goes to jail for 6 pictures in a submarine. That's it. And he went to jail for leaking classified information. And Comey didn't. And neither did Hillary. Here's what he said. And this is the same Christian Saucier that he did spend a year in jail, but was pardoned by Trump.
You have a double edge. Reporters can't leak. You cannot leak classified information. At the same time, we need freedom of the press. But you cannot leak, like Hillary Clinton did, like Comey did. You cannot leak classified information. If you look at the young sailor, Saucier, I mean, he went to jail over not classified, a much lower level. And it's very unfair that he goes to jail and that Comey's allowed to do it all over.
All right, as we continue, Sean Hannity Show at the top of the hour, by the way, Governor Mike Huckabee, his poor daughter, what she has to go through, he's going to join us. Let me go back to the president talking about a wide range of issues at the White House as he was leaving for the G7 summit. And here's what he said.
I may leave a little bit early, and it depends what happens here. Look, all of these countries have been taking advantage of the United States on trade. You saw where Canada charges our dairy farmers 270% tariff. We don't charge them, or if we do, it's like a tiny percentage. So we have to straighten it out. We have massive trade deficits with almost every country. We will straighten that out. And I'll tell you what, it's what I do. It won't even be hard. And in the end, we'll all get along. But they understand, and, you know, they're trying to act like, well, we fought with you in the wars. They don't mention the fact that they have trade barriers against our farmers. They don't mention the fact that they're charging almost 300% tariff. When it all straightens out, we'll all be in love again. I would only do a deal if I get it through Congress. I wouldn't do like Obama did. And fortunately, he wasn't able to get it through. You know, he tried to get it through, the Iran deal. He tried to get it through Congress, failed, so he just did it without.
All right, that's going to wrap things up for this hour. Let not your heart be troubled. When we come back, Governor Mike Huckabee, he's going to weigh in on the battle, the dilemma, as it relates to, you know, journalists having to give their information and sources to the New York Times. And, of course, a preview of next week's big summit and the IG report, which we've all been waiting for. All right, that's coming up. Hour two, Sean Hannity Show and Luke Rosiak. What's going on in the Debbie Wasserman Schultz case? That's straight ahead.
Hope the upcoming meeting in Singapore represents the beginning of a bright new future for North Korea. And indeed, a bright new future for the world. The denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula would usher in a new era of prosperity, security, and peace for all Koreans, North and South, and for people everywhere. We could absolutely sign an agreement. We're looking at it. We're talking about it with them. We're talking about it with a lot of other people. But that could happen. But that's really the beginning. Sounds a little bit strange, but that's probably the easy part. The hard part remains after that. Maximum pressure is absolutely in effect. We don't use the term anymore because we're going into a friendly negotiation. Perhaps after that negotiation, I will be using it again. You'll know how well we do with the negotiation. If you hear me saying we're going to use maximum pressure, you'll know the negotiation did not do well.
All right, hour two, Sean Hannity Show. Toll-free number is 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. I mean, so much news that is happening. We're going to get what we discussed the last half hour. We're going to get into all the president's comments today. I want to focus a lot, though, on this North Korean summit and the president earlier discussing the upcoming summit and saying that he'd only do a deal with North Korea through Congress, unlike the Obama-Iranian deal. Here's what he said.
I would only do a deal if I get it through Congress. I wouldn't do like Obama did. And fortunately, he wasn't able to get it through. You know, he tried to get it through, the Iran deal. He tried to get it through Congress, failed. So he just did it without, which is why I was able to break it up so easy. And Iran is now a different country. They're not looking to the Mediterranean anymore. Iran is now a much different country. Since I signed that out, Iran is a much different country.
All right, joining us now to preview that and the IG report that is coming out next Thursday is former Arkansas governor, former presidential candidate, Governor Mike Huckabee. And, of course, Governor Huckabee's daughter can be seen every day beating down an abusively biased liberal press. And I don't know, man. As a father, I don't know if I can handle that every day. But she does a great job. I mean, and I've come to know her and love her. She's amazing.
Well, she's a tough kid. I tell people she has a lot of her mother in her. And
slow down, Governor. Biden. What do you mean a lot of her mother in her? I've watched you on the debate stage. You're a great debater. You're smart. You love conflict.
Well, you know, I enjoy a good scrap myself. But, you know, the fact is Sarah has grown up in a political world and an environment. She understands what all this is about, and she's totally unafraid of it. It just does not get to her personally, but she does not allow people to take that podium away from her when she's at the White House briefing room. She knows that's her ground. She's there for the president. She knows it's not about her. It's about him. And she recognizes that when she goes out there, you know, her job is not to accommodate what the reporters want her to say. Her job is to make sure that she does not load a weapon that's pointed at the president's head. And every day there are people in the media that would love to stage what really amounts to a coup d'etat against this president and his presidency. And she feels like she's one of those soldiers who's on the front lines.
Oh, she is.
Her job to protect the president and to protect this great republic from the, you know, the deep state and dark forces that would love to change the way we do government.
I want to get into all of that with you. And I think you're right. I think she does an amazing job in many ways. I almost think it's an effort in futility because they've already made up their minds and all they want is their 30-second bite on TV to make them seem like they're tough. And it's not about really getting answers or understanding the president's positions on issues. Next week is going to be massive and historic. No matter what happens, Governor, we've already had so much in terms of accomplishments with North Korea. You know, nobody would have thought the hostages released, that one of the nuclear test sites would be dismantled, that he'd crossed the DMZ, that he'd stop firing rockets over Japan and threatening the entire region in Guam, and is willing to talk about denuclearization. So that's huge. And then that's on Tuesday. And then on Thursday, we've got the IG report coming out. Let's start with North Korea. And what an opportunity to make a safer world. It's hopeful.
Well, despite all the criticisms about his way of statecraft, the truth is the past has been about trying to be nicer to North Korea, hoping that they will respond to the kindness and denuclearize. This president says, let's be tougher on them. Let's expose them to maximum pressure and make it where they don't have a choice but to come to the table and give up their nuclear weapons. I think it's pretty obvious which approach is working better. Now, there's no guarantee that next week we're going to come away with the end of nuclear North Korea, but we are closer to it. This president has led us to a place where the North Koreans understand President Trump is no Trump. He's not to be played. He cannot be taken for granted. And I think Kim Jong-un comes to that table fully understanding.
What do you think has motivated him, though? I mean,
he's in trouble.
His people are starving, but they, you know, I've always said you can't win revolutions with slingshots, and nobody's armed there. But I actually think the most revealing thing that Kim Jong-un has done at this point is he has purged and begun the process of purging old hardliners. That would be the biggest sign that he's now paving the way for a new North Korea.
I think he'd like to stay in power, and he knows that if he does not come to terms with a strong America and a strong president, he is not likely to be in power. And all that his grandfather and father tried to hand him is all gone. So it's a matter of self-preservation, Kim Jong-un. And I think this president has shown that traditional approach to diplomacy, which has not been effective, needs to be tossed and try something different. Mm-hmm. So far, this president is working.
Let me look at, it's now what, day 500, I think, in three of the Trump administration. And the White House actually put out a video, we'll play the audio of it, saying that they said it couldn't be done. And then they put in the president's accomplishments. Let me play that for you, and I'll ask you a question on the other side.
Trump's policies would throw us into a recession, the last thing we need.
Some of those jobs of the past are just not going to come back. He just says, well, I'm going to negotiate a better deal. Well, how? How exactly are you going to negotiate that? What magic wand do you have?
The Dow, well, it's gone up for 8 straight sessions, and it will go up, at least at the opening bell, again today.
Companies are hiring. We know layoffs are down, and companies are hiring. Unemployment for African Americans fell to a new low of 5.9%. Female job seekers, a low as well, 3.4%.
Jobless claims dropping to 3.8%. In fact, we've only seen a number that low since 1969.
Even the New York Times has to admit it. Check out this reporting. We ran out of words to describe how good the jobs numbers are.
You know, everything they predicted was wrong so far. Look at the economy. Look at what's happening. I think what makes a successful politician, not only is the president a disruptor, he's unconventional, the president's iconoclastic, but I think the what serves him well is he keeps his promises, unlike a lot of Republicans, Governor, if we're going to be honest here.
Well, I think the fact is Donald Trump is not so much a Democrat president, Republican president. He's an American president. And for those of us who have been lifelong Republicans, we love America more than we love the party. We love the fact that this is a president who has put America first, which is really what both parties ought to be doing. And the reason that he is being incredibly successful and popular with the rank-and-file Americans, but incredibly unpopular with the leaders of both parties, if you've got a lot of Republicans who can't stand him, is because he has put something in front of their own particular special interest of party loyalty. He has brought a sense of America first. That's what we're seeing at the G7 conference. It's what we're seeing in North Korea. What we've seen in the Middle East, he's decided that if it's good for America, he's for it. If it's not good for America, he's
against. Do you agree with me, though? I would argue that he governs as a conservative, with maybe the exception on paper, only on paper, of trade, because I don't think he has any intention at all of any trade war, not one bit.
But what it is about is making sure that the free trade that we believe in is fair trade. He has demonstrated time and again how we are being taken advantage of. America has been the worst party when it comes to trade. We've allowed people to walk over it. This is a president who says, yeah, we want to trade. We want to do it freely. We want to do it fairly. And if you're not going to do it freely and fairly, then we're not going to do it at all. He has their undivided attention.
What do you think? I watched the president today. Very wide-ranging questions that he had. Everything from, Russia being back in the G7. We saw the video of this woman, one-time drug offense, life in prison. Only one offense. He talked about prison reform. I don't think there was a better feel-good video than this grandmother that got out of prison and running into the arms of her family. And I'm thinking, you know what? We ought to really be looking into this more deeply, and I think this president is serious about it.
Well, he is serious about it, and give him credit for doing something other presidents didn't have the guts to do. He did it in broad daylight. He did it in the middle of a midterm election. He didn't wait till his last 15 minutes in office and slide him under the door of the Justice Department like other presidents, Democrat and Republican, had done. He did it in a way that he stood up and put it in the spotlight and said, you bet I did it because it was the right thing to do. I stand up and give him an ovation for that because I'll tell you, there's no political upside ever to doing any type of clemency, be it a pardon, a commutation, or any other form of clemency. But he didn't do it for the politics of it. He did it for the right and the justice of it.
All right, as we continue, Governor Mike Huckabee is with us. All right, so on top of Tuesday's summit with Kim Jong-un, we now have a date. It's set. It's been done now for, what, 2 weeks, over 2 weeks? The IG report, it's been in the hands of the Department of Justice, and I'm concerned. I want to know what redactions might have been made or revisions made, and I think they need to hold the original version. But finally, are we going to get the story that we already know, that Hillary committed all these crimes and obstructed justice and that she was assisted by people like Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and James Comey?
Well, let's hope so. You know, I think that what we've seen is that there has been an extraordinary number of documents that have been sucked into the black hole that exists at the Department of Justice, so much so that scientists at MIT are studying this scientific phenomena where documents just disappear. I think the IG has tried to approach this with integrity, but there has been such an incredible blowback, not just to him, but to anyone who wanted to see the unredacted documents. The question is, what are they hiding? Who are they hiding it from? How come it is, if the FBI wants to ask me a question, I got to give up everything. And if I don't give it to them, they break down my door at 3 in the morning, haul me out in the yard in my pajamas, and put me at gunpoint. But if we want to ask them a question, they take months to give us the answers. Then the answers they give are incomplete and sometimes completely missing with the factual information that we're asking for.
What did you think? I know you watched this week. So here I am, obviously being sarcastic, saying things like, if I were to advise people, I'm kidding, it's a bad idea, it's not going to work out well for you if you do all the things that Hillary did to her, you know, deleting emails, acid washing her hard drive, busting up devices with hammers. And the media is more angry at the idea, with all of those caveats, that I might be trying to tell witnesses to obstruct justice. They absolutely a fake news freak out. And the problem is, they didn't get that angry, and Hillary actually did all of those things. Is that amazing?
Well, not really surprising. Sean, if I were you, I'd get a good carpenter to come to your home and install some reinforced doors that are going to be less subject to battering rams.
Thanks a lot, Governor. I really appreciate it. I didn't acid wash hard drives. I didn't delete emails. And I even said it's a bad idea and it's not going to work for you. And I'm kidding.
Well, there is no sense of humor on the part of the left. Zero, as I can attest. I say things all the time that I say tongue-in-cheek, clearly, intentionally, not to be taken seriously. But the people on the left take it all so seriously. The only thing they don't take seriously is they don't take the Constitution very seriously, and they don't take the insults toward conservatives seriously. That's all fair game. That's not a problem. But no one can say something that offends their sensitivities without an extraordinary sense of outrage on their part.
Well, Governor, I appreciate your time. I know you have been out there fighting for the president's success, and there's too few conservatives out there doing it, because this is an opportunity to fix this country and make America really strong again. And it seems like there's more people cheering for failure than success. It's very sad to me. Thank you, sir, for being with us. We appreciate your time. All right, when we come back, we'll check in. Luke Rosiak will update us on the Imran Awan scandal. Later on, we'll get to your calls. We'll go back to the media fake news freak out about me and so much more on this Friday. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. Toll-free telephone numbers, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be with us. You know, it is absolutely spectacularly amazing that we have one of the biggest corruption scandals on top of everything else that we talk about every day, one of the most massive intelligence breaches ever, and most people don't seem to want to talk about it. Now, that is the case of Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the hiring of this IT guy, or so-called IT guy, Imran Awan is his name, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Now this guy may be close to a deal with federal prosecutors in what is now becoming a bizarre criminal case with really big potential national security implications, because now there's been a motion filed in this particular case suggesting that Awan's defense attorney and federal prosecutors have been negotiating a guilty plea, and this is all going to come up at a July 3rd hearing. And the lawyer for this guy said he supports the idea a plea happens in court. He said a plea doesn't happen outside of court. Well, we all know that's not true. They all wink and they all nod and they all have a deal and they all go in and they all agree. And the judge says, OK, you agreed. OK. And usually signs off on the deal. But this, you know, here it is. We have now layer by layer, thanks to our friend Luke Rosiak, been able to do a deep dive into this. And what do we find? Well, as soon as Imran Awan was found having double-billed Congress and having access to things that he never should have had access to, and hiring family members, what appear to be unqualified people, for IT jobs, one guy working at a car dealership, another guy working at McDonald's, And the fact that, well, the other Democratic Congress people, well, they ended up firing this guy immediately, but not Debbie Wasserman Schultz. So I want to set this up so you remember the facts of this case. And, you know, first it was Wasserman Schultz threatening the U.S. Capitol over the laptop that she wanted back, literally yelling at the guy. And then regarding Imran Awan, she said she did the right thing. It would have been easier to fire him. Okay, well, we have the possibility that this guy was sending top secret classified information at the highest levels, having access to all these computers, you know, to Pakistani intelligence people. You know, and then Debbie Wasserman Schultz on Iran says that she fired him after he was arrested. It's a little late then. And Jay Johnson actually goes and testified before Peter King's committee that the DNC declined the Department of Homeland Security's offer to fight hacking in a case like this. And at no time, Debbie Wasserman Schultz says, did the FBI, DHS, or any intelligence agency contact her about any breaches. Okay, why not? That's an even bigger problem. Let's play these cuts for you.
Let me just be very clear. At no point during my tenure at the DNC was I contacted by the FBI, DHS, or any government agency, or alerted or made aware that they believed that the Russians, an enemy state, was intruding on our network.
Can you elaborate more on what the DHS's connection with the DNC was, or consultation with the DNC was, after you became aware of the hacking and they became aware of the hacking, as to what was offered them, what they accepted? Was there any level of cooperation at all?
To my disappointment, not to my knowledge, sir. And this is a question I asked repeatedly when I first learned of it. You know, what are we doing? Are we in there? Are we helping them discover the vulnerabilities? Because this was fresh off the OPM experience. And there was a point at which DHS cybersecurity experts did get into OPM and actually help them discover the bad actors and patch some of the exfiltrations, or at least minimize some of the damage. And so I was anxious to know whether or not our folks were in there. And the response I got was FBI had spoken to them. They don't want our help. They have CrowdStrike, the cybersecurity firm. And that was the answer I got after I asked the question a number of times over the progression of time.
Now, that was, I assume, totally different from the reaction you got from OPM.
The OPM effort, we were actually in there on site helping them find the bad actors.
Do you know who it was at the DNC who made that decision, or who was making the resistance?
No.
Do you know if the FBI continued to try to help, try to assist?
I have, I've read in the New York Times about those efforts sometime earlier this year.
Under my understanding, the Capitol Police is not able to confiscate members' equipment when the member is not under investigation. It is their equipment, and it's supposed to be returned.
Well, I think there's extenuating circumstances in this case, and I think that, you know, working through my counsel and, you know, the necessary personnel, if that in fact is the case, and with the permission of through the investigation, then we'll return the equipment. But until that's accomplished, I can't return the equipment.
I think you're violating the rules when you conduct your business that way, and should expect that there would be consequences.
Not only I believe that I did the right thing, and I would do it again. Because, as I said at the beginning of this conversation, there are times when you can't be afraid to stand alone, and you have to stand up for what's right. And, you know, even in the face, there are times you have to spend political capital to do what's right. Like I said, the easier thing to do for me would have been to just fire him. Obviously, I was the person who's had the most political challenges in the last year, so it would have been much easier for me to just cut him loose and say, you know, I'm going to look out for my best interests rather than stand up for what I believe in. But I have to be able to look at myself in the mirror every day. And if there's one thing I'm going to make sure that I maintain is my integrity.
Well, he's not my staffer. He no longer works for me, and when he was arrested, I terminated him. I kept him on the payroll during the time that he was not arrested and not charged with anything, and that was because, as I said, that I was concerned about the violation of his due process rights, and also that there were racial and ethnic profiling concerns as well. I have maintained that it was important and will continue to maintain that when someone's due process rights are potentially being violated, that I'm going to stand up and make sure that that people's rights are protected in this country. That's the oath that I swore to uphold when I swore to uphold the Constitution. And when he was arrested and due process was established, then I terminated him.
All right, joining us with the latest on what this potential deal may be, Luke Rosiak with the Daily Caller. Before I get to the plea deal, what do we know? How much confidential, private, secret, classified information do we know that Imran Awan gave to the Pakistani intelligence officials?
Well, what we know is that he was making access to dozens of computers that he had no business accessing, and he was funneling data off the network. We know that he was taking all the emails of about 30 members of Congress and putting them all onto one server, and then from that server, data was flying off the network. And then when he got busted for this, the IG was blocked from looking at what that data was. So it was a cover-up by Congress from the very beginning to prevent the explosion of this second hack into the heat of the 2016 election. So since that time, they've been trying to obfuscate and hide the facts and protect this guy, but it's not about protecting Imran Awan. It's about protecting members from their conduct in the 2016 election. So this plea deal means they're just going to make the whole thing go away so that they can get the New York Times and the Washington Post to say, according to the Department of Justice, this is all about bank fraud. The key here is that the IG found, the Capitol Police found, other House officials found in the 2016 election that he was stealing from Congress, stealing equipment, stealing data, making unauthorized access to servers, and then one of the key pieces of evidence was stolen itself. Why are we not seeing charges? That's the key here. It's the cover
by
Congress.
Well, that's the thing. They didn't want to what? Admit that they had allowed somebody that wasn't vetted and allowed his family access to our top security information, and you know that this guy has had unauthorized access to all of this House data of the Democrats.
You got to put yourself back into July, August, September of 2016. That's when they were first starting to concoct this whole Russian narrative, and they didn't think it was going to work. There's quotes from Philippe Rhines and others out there that said, you know, we didn't really know we could get the media to latch on to this idea of Russia as a boogeyman. It was all pretty tenuous. And you inject into that this second but simultaneous and very similar hack by Pakistanis, it would make this narrative about Russia impossible. So that's the key here, is Democrats are master messengers. They have these allies in the media, and it's all about the messaging, and you control the narrative. If they would have arrested these guys for hacking Congress, the Russian narrative goes out the window, and suddenly what you have instead is, man, these Democrats look pretty dumb. Not only did Hillary have her server in a bathroom, not only was John Podesta's password, not only did Wasserman Schultz ignore warnings about the DNC from the FBI, now also they hired McDonald's workers with criminal records from Pakistan and paid them $160,000 and didn't do anything when the data was flying off the network. So instead of arresting them, they decided to allow the hack to continue. And when Donald Trump said yesterday on Twitter that this House IT scandal kind of is the key to a lot of things, what he's talking about is it proves the fact that Democrats would have done anything to smear him with this Russian narrative, even so far as knowingly allowing the U.S. to be hacked by Pakistan. It's arguably treasonous what they did to let these guys sit on the network and keep taking data while the IG is warning them, it's getting worse, it's getting worse. They're still funneling data. You got to kick them off. And they said, no, be quiet. They blocked her from investigating. It was a cover-up from the beginning. And now they
have...
Well,
what happens to her in all this? I get the deal with Imran Awan. What's the deal with Debbie Wasserman Schultz for allowing all this and allowing our secrets to be that vulnerable?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, these people don't care about national security. They were willing to, give our secrets to Pakistan in order to win an election. I mean, it doesn't get any more insidious than that. It's just they would stop at nothing at trying to smear Donald Trump with this Russia thing in order to win the election. And if people realize that there was this hack, it proves that Democrats don't care about cybersecurity. They don't care about foreign meddling. They don't care about collusion. It's all just a made-up narrative. And that's why even now, like almost 2 years later, they can't allow people to realize what happened in the House. So now you get into phase two, the cover-up. And they've got, under Jeff Sessions' Justice Department, they've got the FBI and the DOJ going along with the Democrats to make sure that this thing can go away in such a way that people don't realize what really happened. So the FBI, the Capitol Police accidentally, they say, gave evidence to the defense attorney instead of the prosecutors. There's been serious errors in this case. No one can explain why. They've got the falsified invoices. They've got the server logs. They've got the data flying off the network. These things, there's mountains of evidence on it all. Why the hell hasn't Jeff Sessions charged it? I mean, the only explanation is we've got two tiers of justice, one for people that are protected by Democrats and one for everyone else.
And, you know, pretty pathetic, sad news. We're going to watch what happens. Imran Awan. So this takes place July 3rd, and he's going to have a plea deal. We don't know where this ends with Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And what about all the other people involved in this, all the other, I guess, family members that were double billing and had no IT experience?
Well, that's one of the most interesting things, is that all the evidence that the FBI has and the Capitol Police have is mostly actually about another brother, Abid Awan, and they haven't charged him with anything. So they get this the wrong brother on unrelated crimes, which is very savvy in terms of making the media think it doesn't have to do with the House. And then they delay it seven times until the 4th of July weekend, classic news dump, and I think they're going to use this patriotic holiday to whitewash this thing involving a breach on the United States by this Pakistani guy with just a really troubling background. So some people are like, obviously, if you hack Congress, there must be some big secret investigation. Maybe he's squealing on someone. I don't think that's what's happening. I think it's what it seems to be. He's being protected. They're failing to charge things that they have abundant evidence for in order to protect Democrats. And they're just going to let him, give him a slap on the wrist and be done with it. And that's going to be very effective in keeping the Washington Post
so outrageous
company.
It's so outrageous, the things they get away with. I it really numbs the conscience and soul of this country that people would get away with this, literally putting America's secrets out there and making them vulnerable, and there's no price to pay. I go back to, I don't know if you saw the news this week. I said, now, if I told people to do what Hillary did you see all the hysterical coverage over that?
I did.
And by the way, I said, it's a bad idea. I said, kidding. All of those caveats, and these people obviously couldn't figure out Hillary did all of it. Not talk about it, actually did it. And all right, Luke, you've done amazing work. I still would like to see the proper investigation. This is very dangerous overall to our national security. And here we go again, our dual system of justice. All right, we'll take a quick break, and our Friday free-for-all coming up next. We're going to talk a little bit about how hysterical the media got this week and much more as we continue. Sean Hannity Show. All right, news roundup, information overload hour here on the Sean Hannity Show. At the bottom of this hour, I want to pay a little tribute. Just defining a profile in courage, Charles Krauthammer announcing that basically he has been told he only has a short time here to live, meaning just a couple of weeks. He said, this is the final verdict. My fight is over. I want to tell you how his entire life has been a profile in courage. We'll get to that at the bottom of the hour. And some experiences I've had with him, and he loved and actually wrote about one of them. But first, I want to go back to where we were yesterday. I had a stack in front of me yesterday. We've now reduced the size of it. And so I go on the air earlier this week and I say, if I were to tell, I never do it, but if I were to tell, people, Robert Mueller had asked for their cell phones. And if I said, you may want to take those cell phones and delete all your emails and texts, and just to make super sure, you might want to bleach bit your phone and acid wash the hard drive on the phone and clean it all up and everything. And, by the way, after that, you might want to take a hammer and break it into itsy bitsy pieces, and then you might want to you know, when you hand over your phone to Mueller, take out the SIM card, too, and hand it over and say, courtesy of Hillary Clinton, and we don't have a dual system of justice in America. And then I even said, kidding, bad idea, won't work, you won't have the same result as Hillary. And in spite of all of that, there was just this collective meltdown, a fake news freakout, if you will, by Newsweek, AOL, The Daily Beast, Independent Journal Review, Hollywood Life, I'm not sure why, Alternet, Yahoo News, Independent Journal Review, Vice, The Wrap. I mean, these are massive publications, one after another. And they're just hyperventilating. You know, Sean Hannity's advice to Mueller witnesses, bash your phones with a hammer. AOL, delete your emails, acid wash your hard drive. Sean Hannity suggests Mueller probe witnesses should destroy their evidence. Hannity to witnesses in Mueller probe, bash your phone in pieces. And then it goes on. Media reported Hannity told Mueller's witnesses to smash their phones. He unleashes in response. Former Watergate prosecutor says Sean Hannity admitted to criminal witness tampering on live TV. Delete all your emails, acid wash your hard drives, says security expert Sean Hannity. Sean Hannity tells witnesses in Russia investigation, acid wash your emails in a wild rant. It goes on. Hannity suggests, it just goes on and on and on. Sean Hannity recommends White House staffers commit a felony for Trump. And Sean Hannity suggests witnesses destroy evidence. I mean, let me just stop. I can go on. It was everywhere. Everywhere. And then they're so stupid that not only did most of them miss the clear and obvious sarcasm, which, by the way, is protected by the First Amendment and by a Supreme Court case, but we'll leave that for another day. But they, more importantly, they were so outraged that the possibility I might suggest it, even though I'm saying bad idea. It's not going to work out the way it did for Hillary. Kidding. If I were to tell them, meaning I'm not telling them, if I were, and what they miss is how it exposed them. What did it expose them to? Hillary did it all. Listen to the coverage on Conspiracy Theory TV, MSNBC.
Sean Hannity is now literally telling potential witnesses and subjects in the Mueller probe to destroy the evidence and hammer their phones into pieces. Now, Hannity's defenders may call that sarcasm or poetic license, but words are words. Sean Hannity lives off his words, and we all know they have a huge impact. If anyone actually does what Sean Hannity says there, they'd be committing a crime.
What Sean Hannity admitted to and actually was enticing people to do and asking them to do was to destroy evidence, which is a violation of the witness tampering statute.
No responsible person on television, no responsible so-called journalist should be advocating for people to destroy evidence in a serious federal investigation. I don't think that we'll see him prosecuted. Federal prosecutors give people a very wide berth on First Amendment related conduct. And so unless there's something more specific to link it up, I think that this will be what we often categorize as awful but lawful conduct.
Listen, if he's out there advocating for Mueller's witnesses to obstruct justice, then maybe Mueller should speak to him and ask him, where the idea come from? Have you spoken to the president about this? Did the president tell you to say this?
Knowing Mueller, I think he's not going to light that fire under someone who gets free airtime every day. But one angle would be to say, yeah, look, I'm going to a judge, and I'm going to have you cease and desist this activity on national television. Secondly, I want to talk to you and see if Trump has gotten this idea from you or vice versa.
Talk to Mueller. All right, I want to meet Andrew Weissman and Jeannie Ray. And Mueller himself, I have questions for them. You know, they get to ask a question, I get to ask a question. That's how we'll play that game. But, you know, when you really think about it, he may want to speak to you, may want to send a cease and desist. I said, kidding, bad idea, won't work out well for you. And I said, if I were to tell them that, you know, this is awful, but probably lawful. Prosecutors give a wide berth here. I'm like, oh, my God, they're so stupid. Because Hillary, why wouldn't they be as outraged that Hillary did it all. Leslie Marshall is the host of the Leslie Marshall Show. Dan Bongino, former Secret Service agent, NRA TV contributor, and host of the Dan Bongino Show. Welcome, both of you. Leslie.
Hi, John.
Leslie, you do radio.
Yep.
There's things that we call radio, radio bits. I'd say this might go down in history as one of my best.
Well, Sean, I know that my liberal buddies may be angry and your audience may faint. And Dan, take a seat. But I'm actually going to defend you on this. And let me tell you why. As a radio talk show host, because it was clear that you were being sarcastic. It was clear you were kidding. First of all, I don't think anybody in their right mind thought that you were actually asking any witness to tamper with evidence.
Leslie, no, every major news outlet on the web and around the country, you just heard what they were saying. How can they be that stupid?
I'm saying, and I say they're doing their ranch with that, and they're using it to their advantage in a sense, effectively. But the reality is, if somebody were to take your or my, as talk show host, advice legally, they're crazy. And secondly, if somebody has a criminal mindset, they probably would have thought of possibly doing any of those things that you sarcastically and jokingly had referenced, quite frankly. It's not like you have to tell them to do it. But the bottom line, it was clear to me that you and I heard your rant before, you know, you talked about it again today. It was clear to me you were joking, if people listen in your entirety, and that you were being sarcastic.
How many more caveats could I put in there, though? I said, I'm kidding. I said, it's a bad idea. I said, it won't work out well for you. I mean, it can't be any more clear. And what's so amazing, Dan, to me, is they didn't get it. They didn't understand. They're more angry at me and the idea I might suggest it, and Hillary did it all.
Listen, I was actually taking notes during your rant. Let me just give a huge hat tip to, I don't know if it's Ethan or Jason, but that music playing in the background,
I know, it's great.
Absolutely hysterical during that rant. And let me just say as well, this is why I like Leslie. Because, you know, although she's a liberal and she passionately defends her position, when she senses stupidity, she calls it. I watched your segment live. Sean, do you realize you have to have an IQ of about 16.5?
It's so true. It's so true.
Here's the notes I took on this. When you were playing the clip of the liberal imbeciles coming out with their commentary, one guy said, he literally said that. Now, I don't think he understands what literally means, because if you read the commentary, you literally did not literally say that.
That's
you
right.
You put a big caveat in the end that this is not what you were saying. So get a dictionary. That's number one. Number two, one of them says, this is hysterical, I don't think we'll see him prosecuted. Oh, you think? Prosecuted for what? Sarcasm, you idiot? Number one, even if that's what you were saying, which you categorically were not, of course you won't see him prosecuted, because Hillary wasn't prosecuted for doing it. And one final thing. This is hysterical. He's advocating for obstruction of justice. Where does this...
you're right. The irony is that's the incredible part of it. Now, I thought I'd get some reaction. I'm not going to lie. But I never thought...
You did it on purpose for reaction. Just tell the whole truth. Show the wizard behind
the curtain. Oh, no. I was making a point. And the point's a serious one, actually. That is that we have a dual justice system. We have one for the Clintons and one for everybody else. That's why I said, bad idea. It's not going to work out for you the way it did for Hillary. And that's the point. She did all of those things. You know, Leslie, you're a liberal. I know you're not the biggest fan of the Clintons, but she did it all. Why isn't she in jail?
Because, as that person said about you, it's awful but not unlawful, which sounds like a Newport Creamery milkshake from back in the day. But seriously.
Wait, whoa. Slow down a second. How is it lawful to take subpoenaed emails, delete them, to acid wash? Did you ever hear a bleach bit before Hillary? I hadn't. Acid wash your hard drive.
I had not heard that. Yeah. I had not heard that.
She acid washes the hard drive. An aide's busting up hammers with hammers devices. And by the way, she did violate the law, the Espionage Act. And it's a felony to mishandle or destroy classified, top secret, or special access programming information. She did all that, too. James Comey said so.
But if the Department of Justice chooses, and that if is they still can, there's not a statute up on that, and they haven't, then they could proceed, if they so deemed, the criminal path. The reason they haven't, Sean, is because there is no.
I don't think so.
An ace in the hall.
Have you ever heard of an exoneration being written months before they actually did the investigation? Is that normal procedure by law enforcement? And I know Dan knows the answer.
Dan knows the answer, but I'm not going to step into law enforcement shoes. Dan, even though we disagree on things, you would know that better than I.
Well, yeah, and the problem, Sean, with this is they keep focusing on intent in the destruction of evidence and the use of classified information over a private server when that's not a component of the crime. But, Sean, can I bring up the most ironic thing of this whole case? You know, one of them says, I took so many notes, it was so good. One of them, like, maybe they should send the Mueller team to interview him. Sean, I wonder if Aaron Zebley is going to show up. You know, he's on the Mueller team. And you know what's interesting about Zebley? Aaron Zebley represented Justin Cooper of the Clinton team, who's on the record for having destroyed BlackBerry. Is he the one that's going to show up to interview you about your sarcastic segment?
That would be the greatest
interview ever. Put that on your show. It would get the greatest.
Oh, I actually would look forward to asking questions of people like Andrew Weissman and Jeannie Ray. I mean, sorry, but this is the most corrupt team of prosecutors I've ever seen put together. And Leslie?
Jeannie Ree represented the Clinton Foundation. Represented Cooper.
Well, I want to ask how Andrew Weissman felt after the Anderson accounting case. Tens of thousands of fellow Americans lost their job. He lost 9-0 in the Supreme Court. He's been excoriated twice for withholding exculpatory evidence. He sent Merrill executives to jail for a year, only to be overturned by the Fifth Circuit. I don't think you'd want such a person looking into you and your family, Leslie, would you?
Well, I have to say, I would probably not want a lot of people looking into my background if I knew the background of all of those individuals. And that's regardless of who is Secretary of State, which party is in the White House.
But you got to admit, taking somebody with that background and putting him on the team and only Democrats is a bad idea on the appearance. It looks horrible because it is horrible. All right, stay right there. Leslie Marshall and Dan Bongino. I have a tribute for Charles Krauthammer. Just to profile and courage, a letter that he put out today that he expects that his life is ending in a very short time, meaning weeks, not months. He says it's the final verdict. My fight is over. An incredible profile and courage. I want to tell you about Charles Krauthammer when we get back. We'll continue, though, first with our good friend Leslie Marshall and Dan Bongino. All right, final thoughts here with Leslie Marshall and Dan Bongino. Dan, I can only say, you know, as I watch all of this and the added charges against Manafort today, and what I don't understand is what Judge Ellis said. You know, now they're looking at a 2005 tax case to put the screws to Paul Manafort so he'll sing or maybe compose because they want to prosecute Trump or impeach Trump. I think he just exposed the entire corruption as these, you know, political prosecutions go on.
You know, Sean, maybe it's me having been a federal agent and had this power to, you know, take someone's freedom away as a Secret Service agent that frightens me a little bit. But I'm genuinely confused why more liberals who used to be on the side of civil rights are not clearly catching on to what's going on here. Listen to me. They are not targeting a crime here. It is clear as day they are targeting Donald Trump. That is not the way the justice system works. You report a crime and look for people. You don't report a person and then look for a crime. No. That's not the way this works.
Last word, Leslie.
I think that most Americans in the polls show want the truth. And if the truth leads to or away for the president and his administration, the task that was given to Mueller is to look into obstruction of justice and collusion. And I think we need to sit back and let him do his job. And in the end, we will hopefully find out the truth. But if he has to dig and he has to dig deep, I don't care where he's digging as long as it leads to the truth.
All right. Thank you both for being with us. All right. Charles Krauthammer's profile and courage, a letter, his basic thank you and goodbye as he is now facing, in his words, the final fight in his life. And he said it is over as illness has now consumed him. That's next. All right. 25 now till the top of the hour. Looking forward to doing the show 3 in the morning every day from Singapore. And, you know, we're really honored that we have the opportunity. I have some things to tell you about it, but I can't tell you now. And we'll have the best coverage. Next week is going to be the single biggest news week I can think of going into the week. Now, obviously, we don't know what the outcome is going to be. Obviously, we have no idea about what the outcome is going to be. I know the president, knowing him as well as I know, he won't wait 5 seconds before he says, I'll see you later. Well, but we already won. Now the question is, can you get a massive big deal done? That's what is important here. I want to take a minute here and say a word about a colleague of mine. I've known for a little while now that Charles Krauthammer has been sick. And I've known Charles Krauthammer for many, many years in his work at the Fox News Channel. And I read the statement that he released today, and I will tell you, it is one of the bravest things that I've ever read in my life in terms of what one human being can say about what this life is and how precarious at times life can be for all of us. And I think it's one of the hardest things that anybody would have to do as it relates to, you know, just facing the truth in life, and that is that we know we're not going to be here forever. And the older we get, I mean, Anthony Bourdain, who apparently took his life, you just never know. You would think, looking on the outside, everybody would think, oh, he has the best life. He gets to travel the world and get paid to eat, you know, exotic dishes and you know, meet incredible people. Doesn't mean you're happy. You know, I will tell you, I've met people that have everything that are still unhappy. I know people that are depressed. I know people that are manic depressed. I know people that have mental illness. I know people that have physical ailments. I want to read this to you and then tell you a little bit more about what I know about Charles Krauthammer. And he put out a statement today that it blew me away. I have been uncharacteristically silent these past 10 months. Now, I had thought that silence would soon be coming to an end, but I'm afraid I must tell you now that fate has decided on a different course for me. In August of last year, I underwent surgery to remove a cancerous tumor in my abdomen. The operation was thought to have been a success, but it caused a cascade of secondary complications, which I have been fighting in the hospital ever since. It was a long and hard fight with many setbacks, but I was steadily, if slowly, overcoming each obstacle along the way and gradually making my way back to health. However, the recent tests have revealed that the cancer has returned. There was no sign of it as recently as a month ago, which means it is aggressive and it is spreading rapidly. My doctors tell me their best estimate is that I have only a few weeks left to live. This is the final verdict. My fight is over. He goes on, I wish to thank my doctors and caregivers whose efforts have been magnificent. My dear friends who have given me a lifetime of memories and whose support has sustained me through these difficult months. And all of my partners at The Washington Post, Fox News, Crown Publishing. And lastly, I thank my colleagues, my readers, and my viewers who have made my career possible and given consequence to my life's work. Now, I believe that the pursuit of truth and right ideas through honest debate and rigorous argument is a noble undertaking, and I am grateful to have played a small role in the conversations that helped guide this extraordinary nation's destiny. I leave this life with no regrets. It's been a wonderful life, full and complete with the great loves and great endeavors that make it worth living. I'm sad to leave, but I leave with the knowledge that I lived the life that I intended. Charles Krauthammer. I want to just tell you a story because that represents everything I've known about him. Charles Krauthammer's life is a profile in courage. I won't give you the whole story. You know what? It might be worth ordering his book because it's pretty phenomenal. And he actually tells this story in the book. And, you know, we have a Washington bureau and I work out of New York. And as a result, I would never, you know, at different times I'd be down there a lot. Other times I wouldn't be down there much. But I've always watched him on TV. And, you know, I was always busy doing my show and prepping for my other show. So I never really got a chance to watch him every night. But I would have him on frequently as a guest over the years. And at some point, I finally met, and this goes back many years ago, I finally met Charles Krauthammer. I didn't know his life story. I didn't know that he had been in a wheelchair since pretty early on after he had finished medical school. He's a doctor. He's a medical doctor. And I said to him, Charles, I never knew. And it brought the biggest smile to his face. And
I said, I'm so sorry. And he's laughing. He literally was laughing at me at my expense, which was great. And it turned out I didn't know at the time, but it turned out that he was laughing because he never wanted to be defined by being in a wheelchair. I mean, the level of incapacitation for him was severe. I mean, you know, paralyzed from the chest down. And his ability, the amount of courage it took, he would do the shows every single day, write his books and columns every single day. Now imagine, life is hard enough. This life is difficult. And now imagine that every single morning, you're not going to be a doctor that you work so hard to be. You got to now transform your dreams in life, your expectations of what you want your life to be. You end up in a wheelchair. And look at the career that this man has built. Look at the impact, intellectual impact, that he has had. Now, we didn't always agree, and I think he always loved it more when we disagreed, actually. And he'd always make a powerful case on his side, and it was always friendly. So anyway, when he wrote about this experience of me not knowing, and then he talked about so many other people that wrote him that didn't know as well, and it made him happy. Now, think about the challenges just for a minute. If you have to get up, wake up every single day, as hard as life already is, and have the added burden of being in a wheelchair, and have the added burden of having, you know, everything is therefore that much more difficult. Getting dressed is an ordeal. Getting up is an ordeal. Getting a shower, getting changed is an ordeal. Every day, eating was an ordeal. Writing was an ordeal. Challenges that most of us never face in life. And frankly, you know, I've learned this in all the years that I've known military people that I've seen severe injuries. And how did they get up every day? And how did they, guys that double amputees, guys that had their arms blown off, guys that have their faces disfigured, their look totally unrecognizable before they were hurt in action trying to defend us. And I look, every time I think I have a problem in life, I think of people like Charles and people in the military that have sustained these incredible injuries. So now he's facing, and I just love how he did it. You know, I just think the way he said it, my fight's over. This is the final verdict. He's facing a truth that the doctors told him. And I mean, there's always hope for a miracle. But, you know, to say all that he loved, everything that he did in this life, and he's happy to have had the opportunity in this life. And I would just say he is and defines everything that is great about people. Their ability to overcome adversity and challenge. Their ability to dig deep with grit and determination and become the best you can be. The fact that he contributed so much in terms of, you know, using his intellectual curiosity and his intellectual acumen, he was brilliant, to the country and the narratives and the debates that we have. And there wasn't a bitter bone in his body. The guy loved this life, and now he's heading on to the next life. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know there are people that don't have any faith. I just have, I don't know how I would, you know, we always like to think, how would we react to these things? But honestly, I would hope when this moment comes in my life, and it will come, I would like to know it's coming like he does, and I'd like to think that I can handle it as gracefully as he can. And it just shows, it defines him, who he was. That's the man I knew. So when I interviewed him about that story in the book about the wheelchair, he started laughing. I said, you know, this is so embarrassing to me, and you put this in your book. And he goes, oh, don't be embarrassed. That to me was like a gift. And he told me it became a story that he told everybody. And I actually tell my version of it now. And that actually made me happy. That I had turned a moment where I didn't know. Then I got to know about his life and his accident and learned about his experiences. And I had such deep respect for the man that I learned about in the process. Look, I just want to say that, Charles Krauthammer, thank you for the times we've had together. Our thoughts and prayers are with you. Godspeed. You know, incredible life lived. Incredible adversity overcome. He definitely defines having fought the good fight. And well done. I, as a Christian, I just believe that God has prepared for us many mansions in heaven, and the hairs of our head are counted. I believe all that. And that
there's a paradise that awaits all of us. I look forward to seeing Charles there. It's a profile and courage that you don't see very often. All right, 800-941-SEAN is our toll-free telephone number if you want to be a part of the program. Let me go to Pam is in Virginia. Pam, welcome to the Sean Hannity Show.
Hey, Mr. Hannity. First of all, Mr. Krauthammer, Godspeed. The good and faithful servants going home. I got to say that. And I'll be over.
By the way, that is one of the most lovely, incredible lines. If at the end of our life, somebody at our funerals can say, good and faithful servant, welcome home.
Welcome home. That is the biggest statement that we can say about someone, welcome home. And he is just such an icon and such a teller of truth, just as somebody else we know, Mr. Hannity.
I appreciate your kindness.
Well, I watched your movie. I'll just touch on that briefly.
Did you like it?
Fantastic. Oh, my God.
All right, here's my question. Did you cry at the movie?
Yes. How can you not?
Everybody cries. I've actually seen screenings of people and the whole movie theater's crying.
And believe it or not, you can't tell it by this conversation, I am not a crier. I mean, I am not a crier.
Well, listen, neither am I. Although, honestly, just talking about Charles, it was not easy for me. I'm not very good. I'm not very good at dealing with death. It's very hard. I just have this mechanism where I kind of shut it off. I just kind of push it out because I don't think I'm emotionally strong enough to really let it in the way I want, like I would.
Well, if you're like most of us, if you ever started crying over someone like that, it would be days before you stopped.
I know. I mean, it's like when, and I don't want to compare it. This life is so precious and we forget it.
And so brief.
And then on the other hand, it's so incredible. It's such a gift. And what's so amazing about Charles is his was 50,000 times harder than ours. And he loved it and he lived it. I love the people that live life to the fullest, even as imperfect as we are. I love those people.
Exactly.
You know what Donald Trump does, by the way? He lives life to the fullest.
Oh, my golly. Second by second.
Yeah, I mean, and I think there's an example there for all of us.
My dad always used to say, life happens while we're busy living. And I try to live by that.
You know, people have been asking me lately, Pam, how are you dealing with all these attacks? I'm like, I don't know. I don't really think about that, to be honest.
Well, maybe I'm
missing a chip, Pam. I don't know.
No, it's coming from nothing. And I just wanted to touch on that real briefly. I don't know whether I'm more amazed or appalled or aggravated or all of the above. I sat and listened to report after report after report. And I know you play that about the breathless press. And it was like, oh, my golly, can you believe Sean Hannity is telling people, smash your phone, take out the SIM cards, do the bleach. And I'm like, are you all a bunch of morons? Can't you see the hypocrisy in what he's saying? Can't you see
that
he's turning it back on you? And none of them could. I mean, it was, oh, my golly.
And I like the one lawyer said, oh, and he got away with it because he put in all those caveats. I'm like, yeah, are you that dumb? It was... Somebody asked me yesterday, a good friend of mine, he goes, you planned that, didn't you? And I said, yeah, kind of a little bit. Yes, I did.
Executed it perfectly.
I'll be honest, though, Pam. I didn't think they'd go this ridiculously far. How revealing is it, though? They're mad at me because I might, even though I said, joking, bad idea, if I said it, you know, and then, but she actually did it, and then more outraged that I might suggest it. It's
and
hilarious.
I don't think any of them have gotten it still, that you're comparing what you're saying to what she did and none of them have come up with like this, you know, epiphany that, oh, my gosh, let's think about this. Maybe we ought to not be saying that, you know.
They
have all blown right through it.
Well, Pam, I could tell you have a heart of gold, and let's all just put Charles and his family in our prayers. And thank him for all that he's done for all of us over the years and the service that he provided this country. Those words are powerful. Welcome home, good and faithful servant. Unbelievable. We'll continue. All right, amazing news night tonight on Hannity on the Fox News Channel. The obviously a preview North Korea, a preview of the IG report. We've got every angle covered tonight. Also, the latest attack against Manafort, as if this is the big Russia collusion story. It's a big nothing burger. Jeanine Pirro, Lou Dobbs, Sarah Carter, Greg Jarrett, David Limbaugh. Mark Penn is back tonight. Victoria Tunsing, Monica Crowley, Danielle Hoffman. 9 Eastern tonight. Set your DVR. We'll see you tonight at 9. We'll see you from Singapore on Monday. Thanks for being with us.